This episode brought to you by Beta Brand, the San Francisco-based source for crowdfunded clothing you can visit in person the next time you're in San Francisco, or stop by anytime online to shop bestsellers like dress pant yoga pants and now yoga jeans. And when you do, use the code SPIRIT20 to save 20% off anything on the site. For you designers out there, you can submit your own ideas and actually earn money when they become full-fledged Beta Brand products. We're big fans of the company, what they do, and we think you will be too. So check them out at betabrand.com. This and every episode also brought to you with support from Prestope by the Spirit of 608. It's the new, affordable, interactive, and community-driven alternative to traditional PR and media relations built with care by us, especially for fest brands. Visit the site to find out more about how we're able to bring our members one-on-one help and feedback from media experts, including direct answers to your questions, recommended daily media outreach tasks curated by us, especially with your business in mind, a DIY PR resource library, exclusive media ops, and connections with other fest founders, plus much more, all for a monthly cost that's less than what a single hour of professional PR or media consulting would cost your brand. So check it out at prestope.com. That's PRESSDOPE.com. Spirit of 608, episode 102. You're listening to the Spirit of 608 podcast. I'm your host, Lorraine Sanders. Keep listening for stories, tips, and advice from women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. I call it FEST, and it's the future. Hey, hey, and welcome to today's show. I'm excited to bring you a conversation today with a woman who comes from a part of the fashion world, or she actually is not even primarily in fashion. And I'll get to that in just a second, but she brings a perspective to fashion that I've never had on the show. And I know those of you out there who have brands and actually create fashion and accessories products are going to be eating up what she has to say. She is Cynthia Summers, costume designer for such shows as the Netflix original series Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events, Bravo's Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, the reality television spoof show or parody Unreal, and before that, The L Word, which was a super groundbreaking show that also showcased some equally as groundbreaking fashion. So I was excited to be able to get Cynthia to come onto the show to talk about her work, and I think you're going to fall in love with her interesting path and trajectory. Her career is really, really fascinating, and how she got to where she is something that we go into in the conversation. But along with that, I know you're going to love how much of an advocate Cynthia is. She's really kind of a subversive advocate for vegan and ethical fashion with what she does. And I mean subversive in like the best way possible. But she really goes out of her way to try to promote and amplify brands that are doing things in an ethical way. And she showcases them on her social media accounts. And she also brings them into her wardrobes for the shows that she works on. And hear her talk a little bit about how she does that, how she sources clothing. I mean, I knew nothing about any of this stuff. And if I was a designer, I would certainly want to know, you know, how can I get my clothes on these celebrities? How can I get featured in a show? And Cynthia is the kind of person that makes that stuff happen. So I know you're going to love hearing from her. And this is one of those great conversations that we get to have on the Spirit of 608 that is not only inspiring because of Cynthia's story and her own path, but also it teaches you a lot because you get to hear the inside scoop from somebody that you might not necessarily run into in your day to day. So Cynthia, thanks for coming on the show and sharing all of your great information with us. Before we get to the conversation, shout out to our fabulous episode and show sponsor, Beta Brand. Speaking of things that are slightly subversive in the best way possible, Take a look at their round trip dress when you get a chance over at BETABRAND.com. It's pretty cool. They just crowdfunded this into production. So that means it was posted as a design and everybody on the site who liked it voted for it. And now it's going to become a Beta Brand product. This dress is one of those things that feeds my hunger for convertible clothes or clothes you can wear more ways than one. You can actually wear this dress four different ways. And it's reversible. So you've got a printed side and then you've got a solid side. But then it's got one side that you could wear as a low V-neck, or you could turn it around and have sort of a high scoop neck. And it actually looks pretty darn good both ways. So I'm thinking next time I have to travel somewhere, a solution like this would work so well, because, you know, I'm finding as I travel, what I end up doing a lot of times is essentially wearing a uniform for the trip, but changing it slightly. So I'm wearing a similar silhouette almost throughout the whole time because it allows me to keep the same shoes and pants and, you know, just the same shape. It makes everything easier, but I don't want to wear exactly the same thing every day. So this would be a great solution to that. I think it's a really cool example of what Beta Brand does. Hope you'll check it out. At the moment, this dress is 15% off on the site, but you know, you can always get 20% off when you use the code SPIRIT20 at betabrand.com. Stick around after the conversation with Cynthia for the free resource we'd like to give you from PressDope.com to help you stay on task with your media outreach and strategy, as well as the latest tools, tips, resources, and cool things Fest founders are all over this week in the Spirit of 608. Fest is the best Facebook group. Now on to the conversation with Cynthia Summers, television costume designer. Cynthia, welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, you're our first entertainment industry insider to come on the show. This is a big moment for me.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm so honored.
I'm excited. Great. Well, we usually have women who are building businesses in the fashion space, a lot of designers and also fashion tech entrepreneurs and people that are interested in sustainable and ethical fashion. And so I was really excited to get somebody on who has a completely different perspective to bring, but also a really important one for people thinking about ethical and sustainable fashion, because I know that's something that you're really interested in personally and professionally.
Right. Yes.
So can you start us off a little bit by telling us what it is that you do and where you're currently doing that work?
Yeah, so I'm a costume designer. I work primarily in TV and film, and I'm currently located in Vancouver, Canada, which is lovingly dubbed as Hollywood North because of its close proximity to Los Angeles, and also it's just a great place to shoot. And the crews are great here. So, and a lot of productions are done in Vancouver these days. So that's where I'm currently at, and just finished up the final season, oh dear, of Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. And I have just started the second season of Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events, which is, they're two completely productions, but they're both really incredibly interesting to me and fun. So, yeah.
Those are so different. And yet, yeah. I'm like really interested in both. I'm actually, as listeners will know, and people that have followed me on social media for a while, I'm a bit of a Bravo-holic.
Are you?
Yeah. I mean, but I will say I'm more of the sort of reality TV when I'm trying to unwind kind of person. So I love that kind of stuff. But then Lemony Snicket, I mean, is there a better
kids
author out there? I don't know. So
it's such an amazing show. We're just starting. We haven't started shooting yet. So we're into heavy prep now of the show. So it's getting really interesting.
Okay. Well, speaking of that and prep and what you do on a day-to-day basis, listeners and myself included, we are not entertainment industry people. We don't necessarily know what goes on in a costume designer's world. So can you walk us through, just school us quickly on what you do and what you're responsible for when you're working with a show like Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce or the new Lemony Snicket show?
Sure, absolutely. And I want to preface this with, a costume designer's job in film and television is primarily the same. It's just different sort of time frames that you get to do your work within. So obviously television production is a lot more condensed. Feature film world is, it varies, but when you're preparing a show, which is the time that you get to buy and purchase and make all your costumes, it can be anywhere from like a month if you're doing a sort of a smaller feature film or an indie to 6 months or more if you're doing a giant feature. And in TV land, once you get going, if you're doing something like Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, you have 7 days to prep the next episode on Lemony Snicket's because it's kind of a feature. It has the essence of a feature film. We shoot for 23 days as opposed to 7. So we have 23 days to prepare. So basically my job is in any genre of film that I would work in or any other designer, primarily is you get the script, you read the script, you meet with producers and directors. Basically, you break down the script and all the characters into their sort of finite forms. You talk about color, you talk about composition, all the characters and how they sort of, what they mean in relationship to each other, which sort of, from my world, determines what their color palette will be, what their look will be, what their look will be when they're in a certain situation with other characters or alone. A lot of times, a character won't, if they're coming into the scene for the first time by themselves, and they're not interacting with someone else, and that's the first time you see them, the costume has to tell you a lot about that person that you're looking at, that character that you're looking at. So whether it's jeans and a t-shirt or whether it's a medieval costume, you need to kind of know who that person is almost immediately, or you want to have a sense of time and place and maybe the intent of that character. And so it's a giant collaboration, whether it's television or film. It's incredibly creative, but I want to emphasize collaboration because what I do and what my team does with me is just one part of a bigger wheel. And it's really not just about my vision and my sort of what I want to bring to the production. It's what I want to bring and also how that will sort of collaborate with what the production designer and the director and even the cast want to bring to what you see on TV every day or in a film. So my basic day, sorry, this is a bit long, but my basic day involves, it starts very early because now we're a virtual world. So anything that's happening, I'm working on the West Coast, anything that's happening for me on the East Coast or even in Europe or Asia, you know, we're on different time zones. So unfortunately, that means you kind of need to be gettable at just about any time of the day or night. And then, you know, getting up early, doing whatever I have to do virtually, kind of before I get out of bed, and then getting up, getting to the studio, sort of forming the day with my team, meetings, shopping, whether that's for fabrics, because if you're, it's a build show, or whether it's retail, because it's, you know, a shopping show, looking for things online, shopping online has become a big part of my world, and fittings and alterations, talking to seamstresses. But the day, it's a 12-hour day on the short side, 5 days a week for the designer, which is a department head position. You need to be basically on call on the weekends if you're not working weekends. It's not a glamorous life. I think a lot of people know that now. I think in the past, maybe in the 30s or 40s, it appeared to be a very glamorous life where someone like the iconic Edith Head would come in and draw her beautiful illustrations and people would chit-chat, and I'm minimizing this. It's much bigger than that. But now it's digital, and I have a full-time illustrator for Lemony Snicket's, and I have a full-time tech costumer who does a lot of research online and then puts together mood boards. And it's a little different now, but it's still incredibly creative, and even more so maybe because now we have virtual access to the globe. So.
Well, I love that you're saying that it's not glamorous. And at the same time, it, you know, it sounds really exciting. And like you said, intensely creative. And, you know, I also, it's really interesting too, to hear you sort of describe a show as a shopping show versus a show that you're going to have to make the costumes, I assume. And so I want to get into, like, a little bit later in the conversation, how you source things and, you know, what's actually going on in the process of getting those garments into your world so they can get on the characters that you're creating. But before I do that, I would love to know, I mean, you've been doing this for more than 2 decades, it looks like. Did you always yes. think that you would go into costume design? How did you get your start?
I started off in musical theater. I was a dancer. And I didn't think that I would be a costume designer. And I'm definitely the kind of person that jumps in as long as I know that I can pull it off at the end of the day somehow. I'm the kind of person that jumps in and says yes and then figures it out. So that being said, sort of when my dancing career was on the waning because I, you know, then was having children and things like that, I started teaching dance. And then from there, I started creating dance costumes for my students, which became a giant cottage industry for me. And it became bigger than just that. So I had to make a move and I wasn't sure what that would be. And I needed to discover whether I needed to take it outside of the home, which meant overhead. I had to get a studio. I had to get stitchers. I had to get machines. It was going to cost me to move out of the home. So I decided at that point to go back to go to fashion design school because I had not, and to see if there was anything I could do differently, anything that I was missing. And I discovered, and because I was an adult this time, I didn't have the luxury of just spending 4 years at getting my BA at Parsons or somewhere glamorous like or fabulous like that. So I did a condensed 1 year course that was 4 years in one, and it was hell, but it was fantastic. And I did learn at the end of the day that I really actually did have all the tools that I needed. So, and while I was there, there was a film in town that was looking for someone to build tutus, and that was my background. So that was my first foray into making something for film. And just by virtue of doing that, I knew that was my next step. I just was hooked. And I knew it was my next step. So it was like old school. I found someone who worked in the industry that I knew, who worked in set deck. And she had a production designer friend that she introduced me to. He didn't have anything going. And I literally kindly and nicely bugged him and stalked him for about a year. And then he got an indie and he said, "Do you want to do it?" And I said, "Yes." And I had no idea what I was doing, not a clue. But you know what? I built lasting relationships with the producer who is now one of the executive producers on Lemony Snicket's, with one of my coworkers who I've been working with on and off ever since. And that was my first job. So that was 20 years ago. Wow. 20 plus years ago. Yeah. So it kind of was an evolutionary thing for me. And I think that's so important. I probably, if I could think back on it, I don't know if I actually knew that's what I wanted to do. Maybe in my heart and soul, I knew that's what I wanted to do. So it's important that. And of course, when you're younger, it's hard to be grown up about that sort of thing and listen to your heart and listen to your soul, and it will take you on your path, your right path you're meant to be on. And I believe that. But of course, I never really knew that. So, and my sort of actualizing that was just to say yes to everything and be naive about it, but be responsibly naive, I guess is a good way to put it. And just be proactive and willing to work extremely hard and be passionate about it. And that's never stopped for me. And I want to say to anybody who's looking to get into this business or even your own business, which is what I was doing before this, is you must remain passionate. And if it becomes a chore, although sometimes our jobs become a bit of a chore, let's be honest. But if on a daily basis or a long-term basis or after a year, you're finding that you're really having a hard time getting out of bed and going to work, it's not meant for you. And I think I've been lucky or cognizant enough to recognize that this is what I want to do. I didn't jump in and go to school and come out of school and go, I want to be a costume designer, because I don't think I ever knew what that meant. Just like some of your listeners might not know what it is that I do. I had no idea. And I don't know, maybe if I knew I'd be working this hard, I might not. I might have chosen the path of just being a painter and painting from home, being a poor artist. I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah, but I love what you're saying, because it is, you know, you're really illustrating the fact that you can be, I sort of hate the word passionate, but I don't know.
I know.
But you're like, you can be really invested in something, like you were with what you were making at home after you had kids, and you thought, well, maybe this is the next big thing for me. So I'm going to go get some education around it and sort of formalize it. And yet then that led to this next thing. And it's almost like you were going full bore in the direction you were supposed to be going, but you were open enough to let it shift as it needed to shift. And you ended up in the best place for you, you know? And I just think that's really inspiring to hear.
Yeah. And I think even when I got to where I am, like when I got to my first film, and designing my first film, which was the first thing I did. So I've never done anything else in the industry but be a costume designer. I mean, the other direction, of course, is to start in a more junior position within the department, which is the more logical way to go. But I think you just have to take your opportunities when they come. And even if I had done that first film and decided, wow, this is just not for me, of course I would have ridden it out to the very end and done it to the best of my ability or more, because that's what the world expects now, even more now, because it's so competitive. Even if I got to the end of that film and decided it was not for me, it would have been, again, another good experience of learning who I am and what I want to do. And I think that people, it's so, you know, the way we're set up to finish high school, make sure you know what university or college you're going to next, commit yourself to 4 years, whatever that means for you, and then have this super clear path. I think that's so wrong. How can you be so young and have such a, I don't think it's wrong to go to university or college. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's wrong to choose that path, but I think you just need, like you say, to remain open to a change, and hopefully your parents are as well, because that's, of course, you're going to be a doctor. Ah, well, maybe you're not. Maybe you are, but maybe you're not. I just feel like, and especially as a woman, and if you're going to be an entrepreneur and doing your own thing, which is like, let's face it, who doesn't want to work for themselves? You just need to be open to change, or open to maybe this isn't what, even though I think it is, and what I'm forming myself to be, and what I'm informing myself to be and everyone else, maybe this isn't for me. And my idea when I was young, I wanted to have lots of kids and stay at home. And I also paint and be a painter. Wouldn't that be lovely? And I just would have this giant batch of kids and a great partner and just paint my life away and just be and travel. And, you know, very early on, I kind of started that way. And that was clearly not going to happen for me. Never.
Well, and I think a lot of women who are interested in doing their own thing, whether it's having their own business or being an independent creative in some other kind of way. I mean, you're doing this delicate balance a lot of the time where you're thinking, yeah, okay, everyone tells you, you've got to keep at it, keep at it, keep at it to really achieve something. But then at the same time, sometimes there's points where, you know, maybe you don't need to keep at it. And there's this other thing that comes into your view and you're like, maybe I should do that instead. And that's really the path. So it's cool to hear what you're saying, because you're not categorizing the changes that you made as a failure of some kind that occurred, but rather sort right. of an evolution, which is a really, I think, fresh and uplifting way to view it all. So
yeah. And I think, you know, at your point on failure, I hate the word failure. And I think, unfortunately, that's the way the world views what we do as people, is you're either a success or you're a failure. And the middle ground is equally as so important as the two extremes. And I don't think a failure is, I mean, if you could set out to do something and lose all your money, in some sense of the word, I think you've lost at something. I don't think you've failed at it. I think you have to look at that as a learning, like a hard learning moment. It didn't work out for you, but it doesn't mean, I mean, great, kudos for you for trying, you know. And it's by trial and error that we learn things and new things are invented and the world changes. So that's something that I, at this point in my life, 20 years later in my career and my life, I am allowing myself personally now to be okay with the changes that I'm making now and not be hard on myself that I didn't do them earlier. Because I used to do that earlier with myself. You know, before I was a vegan, I was a vegetarian. I was a bad vegetarian. I fell off the wagon all the time, you know, and I didn't equate food with product, like what I'm wearing and what I'm using in my job and things like that, or just with the environment. Like I didn't quite, and I have friends that are political vegans and I love them. And I always thought, oh my God, I will never be like them because I can't, they're so hardcore. But we need those people because we need someone to make the changes and we need someone to aspire to. I think that works in business. I think that works in personally. And I think we need to be gentle with ourselves that, okay, I didn't do that then, but I'm doing it now because now I see it. I didn't really see it before, but now I'm seeing it. I think that's more important, to really understand why you're doing what you're doing, whether it's personal growth in life for business or personal growth in life politically or environmentally, or with, you know, whether you're what you eat or what you do or how you raise your children. I think you need to be gentle with yourself, and it's a progression up through life, and it's just hard to see that when you're young, and you need to give yourself time to feel what you're feeling and know that it's the right thing for you. And then you can build on that. It's building blocks, it's building blocks, really.
I love the, you said you're a bad vegetarian. I feel like that sounds like the name of some kind of really popular vegetarian food blog. I don't know. I think there's something there.
But some band or something.
Bands, yes. And like, let's talk about your interest in veganism, vegan clothing. I mean, you have a real interest in ethical fashion that comes through on your social media. And from what I understand, you also try to bring some ethical brands into the work that you do as well. Where does that interest come from? Like, why is ethical fashion and paying attention to that something that's on your radar these days?
It's personal. And I want to say that, let me see, when did I do Bones? I did 3 seasons of Bones. And of course, most people know that Emily Deschanel is vegan. And she's a political vegan in a soft way. I have another really, really great friend, Simone Reyes. She's a very political vegan, like outspoken. She uses her, you know, her celebrity platform, as does Emily. But Emily does it in a much softer way than Simone. and they're both important. But when I worked on Bones, that was my first, you know, I've worked with a lot of actresses and actors over the years who say, you know, if you can please not put me, my character, in leather shoes, if that's possible. I know it's not always possible because I'm not the only person who is dictating what this character's wearing. But when I worked with Emily, I came in on the fifth season, and they've just finished, I think, their 11th season. And I came in on the fifth season, so the show was well-formed. Emily, you know, had her, she was number two on the call sheet, so she had a lot of political and sort of, she had stature. And she doesn't wear, obviously, leather or fur. She does not wear silk. She does not wear wool. Basically, she wears cotton or synthetic fabrics. And that was my first sort of moment of crisis, personal crisis, where it made me reflect on how I've been operating as a professional. And at that point, I was vegetarian. I have a super funny vegetarian story with Simone when I came to Stan House, but I'll tell you that later if we have a moment. But Emily really taught me that you can, I mean, her character, if you know the show Bones, her character lives a lot in lab coats, and she's not a very fashion forward character. So it was a little easier because we could build, you know, I could shop for 100% cotton to make her blouses. At that point, there weren't as many vegan shoe designers out there in the world. So it was a little more difficult for me to find what she needed for wear, because also her footwear there was peculiarities that we needed to fulfill for that. So, I mean, and at that point I struggled with, because I come from, like, a lot of the shows that I've done are fashion oriented, like The L Word. And of course, haute couture is all like fabulous leathers. It's really hard for me to even say it now. Don't even make me say lambskin or anything like that. You know, it's really wonderful luxury leathers and luxury furs and luxury, you know, wools and things like that. And it was really hard for me to go from that to putting basically plastic shoes on Emily, who was our star. So that was a learning curve for me.
But what you're saying is that at first it was really actor driven, with people on set making the requests of you and you saying, okay, I've got to go dive into this. And then, wait a second, I'm vegetarian and thinking about all these issues, and like, what was I thinking before? Is that kind of a moment that you had? Or
exactly, because that was the moment that I want to say I realized I was a bad vegetarian. And that's the moment when I sort of really made the distinction between vegetarian and veganism, and also beyond what I'm eating, like beyond that, like the social commentary on veganism and how that relates to all the ethics, the animal ethics, the food ethics, the global ethics, how things are organically and ethically grown, and people ethics, and how we're using people in third world countries to produce things, and the terrible environments that they're working in, and child labor, and everything that, like, it was snowballed on me, just snowballed on me. And sort of the high point was, you know, as I was saying, my friend Simone, I was staying at her house in LA while I was doing Bones, and I was vegetarian at the time. She was coming to visit for the weekend. She was not living in her house. And I had eggs in the fridge, and I thought, okay, I'll boil these eggs. I never make breakfast for myself, which is bad, but I will boil these eggs before I go to work. I put the eggs on. I went to work. I got the Fox. I started getting these calls from Simone. I was in a meeting. I could not laugh at this now, but at the time was the worst moment of my life. And I couldn't answer because I was in a meeting. And finally, I read one of her texts. She says, why is the fire department at my house? Which, of course, is in Laurel Canyon, where there's a fire, like the whole canyon, it's like, is on red alert, because Laurel Canyon is highly volatile for fire. And I don't know if it was a higher power or what, but I never make breakfast in the morning. I made the eggs. I let them burn to a crisp. They exploded all over her kitchen. The fire department came. Her house was full of smoke, and she was coming in 2 days. And so I had to fess up that I don't know if I'm thinking this through, this whole, what this all means for me. And now I need to. So that was my turning point. And it was nothing she put on me. In fact, she was so gracious about it all. But it was really, it was me being, you know, it was a next step for me. And I had to be, again, this is one of those moments where I had to be gentle with myself and say, this is a next step. This is a growth moment. I need to listen to what has happened to me right now. What does this mean for me? How am I living this life? And that is a moment that I started becoming vegan.
If almost and then, exploding, and then, you know, eggs in the fire department and burning down your friend's house, right? It's not a moment. I mean, that's a sign if I've ever heard one. Like, so. That's
like, if there's a God, that is a sign from God. Like, that's a lightning bolt. That is. And if I didn't pay attention to that in some form, I mean, then I'm a lost cause.
Well, so let me ask you, with that shift that you made and now working on, you know, many shows since then, are you able to sort of proactively incorporate ethical lines into your work? And, you know, if so, how does that go? I mean, do you ever get any pushback to feature big name designers that maybe aren't produced in the way that sort of aligns with your values because it's better for the show and that's what the audience wants to see? Or how does that all work?
Yeah, it's, I would like to say that one day I'm going to be a designer who's going to be able to use all like ethically produced fabrics, no leather, absolutely no leather, clearly no fur. I can say I use no fur at all. Now there's so many designers that are actually using amazing faux fur. There's like beautiful faux furs out there. I mean, you can go so deep with this. Like that, this is my first question. If, like, you've really looked at it, okay, I'm using faux fur. Well, where is this faux fur coming from and how is it being produced? But you can stop yourself in your tracks and disable yourself from being able to do your job. And I think we have to take this in increments. It'd be great to just get out there and go, okay, I'm only using vegan products and ethically produced products. But again, it's stepping stones and it's baby steps in a sense, because I don't have 100% control over what I'm able to use. But I can put my best foot forward. And fortunately, there's so many actors and producers now that are on board with this. So that really, really helps. There's a lot of vegan and or vegetarian actors and actresses out there now. So it makes it easier. There's also a lot of high-end designers that, like Stella McCartney, of course. And there's a new, I can't say that because I don't know how new he is, but Mansur Gavriel, who does really luxury bags that I kind of recently discovered. I've been using a lot of Gunas bags, which is a New York designer. Mm-hmm. And for me, her product really works within Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce because it's quite diverse. And I've got all of these women on the show that have got these diverse looks. So it really works for me. Matt and Nat, I've used for, I don't know, I want to say like 15 years. And I hope that's how long they've been around. I think they may have been around longer. But they are one of the vegan designer bags companies that have been on the forefront, and they're Canadian. I believe they're out of Montreal, and they're a Canadian brand. And again, I can use the faux leather also for handbags and shoes now. It is so much more sophisticated than it used to be. I would never call their shoes plastic. Whereas before, you know, even when I was looking for shoes, probably that was around 2005 or 6 for Emily on Bones. And then at that point, I would say I'm having to look at plastic shoes because they look plastic. Now, really great vegan leather looks like leather, as does the fur. So there's a lot more to draw from now, which is really great. And you can also source ethically produced fabrics or pieces or designers that work ethically, right from the fabric or that they're using to the way they treat their employees. So it's a smaller circle. And for what I do, I cannot use only that circle, but I'm trying to use it more and more. And I find that there are a lot of actors like Lisa Edelstein on Girlfriends who appreciate when I bring her vegan bags and vegan shoes or any vegan products, or one of her favorite designers, Raquel Allegra, who's a designer out of Los Angeles. And she has a real artisan approach to what she designs and the products that she uses. So, you know, there's happy mediums there for sure. And it's becoming bigger and bigger. And then with the advent of social media, I find a lot of new vegan lines on Instagram. Instagram is one of my favorite places to go, by the way, because I live in an incredibly visual world and it's much easier and more intimate and instant for me to go on Instagram and see, you know, what people are putting out there. And on Instagram, I believe that designers and people are making it a little more personal as well, as opposed to Twitter, where it's a lot more. That's where I post my politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I noticed that at least using one of these websites that can tell you what people on TV shows, characters on shows are wearing.
Yes.
I was able to see that you were using Raquel Allegra, Mara Hoffman, Stella McCartney. I mean, it seems like a lot of it brands that people really love just for what the brand is and what the style is actually have all these really cool ethical or sustainable elements. I mean, there's so many ways to be a responsible fashion brand these days, and, you know, different designers are doing it different ways. But I mean,
right.
I thought it was pretty cool to see those showing up, you know, on Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce. Can you talk a little bit about how you actually source and, you know, the clothes and the accessories that make it onto the show? You're mentioning Instagram. Would it ever be in the realm of possibility that a designer who has a really great line that you haven't heard of finds you on Instagram and you might actually use them in the future show?
Oh, absolutely. And here's a perfect example. So on Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, the character Phoebe is, Girlfriend's Guide is very, it's LA. So everything is LA centric on the show, or not everything, but the one character Phoebe definitely is. She resides in Silver Lake. She's got that boho East Side vibe going on. And I have to be honest, I can't remember if I found Roxanne or if Roxanne found me, but Roxanne is Gold Dust Dresses. And I think her last name is Nasal. Roxanne is her name in any case, Gold Dust Dresses. And she works with repurposed fabrics, and she makes these amazing. So she goes to India. She sources out fabric ends and vintage fabrics. They're all vintage. She brings it home, and all of her pieces are so beautiful. And she uses these, they're floor length. They're usually cut away. What's particular to her dresses are, if there was a hole, she will use the hole as a sort of a design detail. And she will repair it in such a way where you actually, A, don't see it at all, or it becomes, it's in the part of the dress where, you know, it becomes, like I say, a design detail. But her end is another way of being ethical. And the dyes, because they're all vintage pieces of fabric, the dyes are vegetable dyes. And everything that she does is precious, so, and they're all one of. So it's not going to work for me in a sense where, on a show like perhaps Lemony Snicket's, where we have to have multiples of one look because we have our main character, but then we also have a photo double that works for that person, or they're going to do a stunt. So, you know, she's not going to work for everything I do, but she was perfect for the character Phoebe. So I went to her not her studio, but her house in Silver Lake. She actually lives in Silver Lake, so she is Phoebe. So it was a perfect marriage at that point. Her pieces are gorgeous. She will make one-of-a-kind pieces for you. You can pick a fabric if she's still got fabric hanging around. It worked in every way. It was like one of those happy moments where it was perfect for my character. I loved the way she ran her business. I loved how passionate she was about it. It's still a bit of a cottage industry. She's still trying to get up and running. She's still trying to get more visibility. So that's what I can give back to her. For instance, you can find her on my Instagram, or I will mention her in conversation like this. And I think that it's important for grassroots designers to reach out to costume designers, or reach out to costume designers that do commercials are another great way to go, because you get huge visibility if you can get yourself on a commercial. And we're all looking for unique pieces. Even with Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, which is a fashion-forward show, a lot of times I would be asked, well, what's the trend? What are you going to be trending? And for the last three seasons of the show, we shot all of them together, and we just finished. And third season just finished airing. The fourth season will air sometime this year, and we don't know when the fifth season will air. So how are you going to be trend-setting a year from now?
Yeah.
So one way to do that is by sourcing from artisanal designers, because they are one of a kind pieces, or they're unique looking.
Ooh, that's so interesting. I never yeah. have thought about this. And mm-hmm. I know that, I mean, so many people listening to this are going to be like, contact you on Instagram, because there's so many of them. I feel like there's this huge explosion in small independent brands that are doing things beautifully, like Gold Dust Dresses, Roxanne, the woman that you just mentioned. And they're really creating high quality things. And so that's very cool to hear that that kind of thing actually could be an advantage when you're talking about television, when they're filming so far ahead of time, that they need to be sort of trend agnostic.
Yes, exactly. That's a great term. And here's another example. So, and Girlfriend's Guide has got a diverse group of characters. So we've got Abby, who, if anybody who watches the show, the top five characters are core group. And we added a new character who is the character Barbara. And she is a full-figured African-American woman. And she is beautiful. And when she came onto the show, I was like, well, I need to make her fashion forward. She doesn't start that way. She grows with she becomes one of the core group of friends. So we wanted to sort of see her on the outskirts and become a part of the group and adopt her, gain her own inner sense of unique fashion. And I was like, oh, okay, so what am I going to do with, how am I going to make that work? How am I going to make this flamboyant, really fun character fit into our group of women and retain her own personal style? And I found again, and where did I find her? I think I found her online, Jibri, who is a designer in Atlanta, and she has a little more visibility than, I want to say, Gold Dust Dresses, but she designs for a niche group of women, which are African-American women who are full-figured, but still want to be bright and fashion forward and, you know, unique looking, but sexy. And she was perfect. Her line was perfect for my character.
Will you spell the name of that brand for me so we have it?
I'm going to probably spell it wrong. It's J-I-B-R-I.
Okay.
I believe. Yeah. And she's online and she's also on Instagram. And as it turns out, Retta, who's the actress who plays the character, loves the line. And because Retta is also a comic, a stand-up comic, so she travels and works. So, I mean, it's a perfect line. It was just a perfect line. And again, it's another sort of happy happenstance where I found virtually someone who is working in another part of the country. And the jewelry I found online, actually they approached us at the beginning of season or sometime in season two. And it's a jewelry designer in Germany and she produces her line in the Philippines, but it's a very, again, artisanal line and it's Conplot. It's Miranda Constantina Du. I don't know if I say her last name properly. And her jewelry is beautiful. You can see it on the character Delia, on the character Retta, and sometimes on our character Phoebe. So they're just unique pieces. You know, she sells globally. She's very passionate about her collections. They're really unique. I don't see them anywhere else. So, you know, it's become a global shopping cart that I work from in a sense, but it's just really, I find it so invigorating to find these women, primarily women at this point, who are working and finding through their own passion and being able through the internet, being able to sustain their products and their passion and their vision. And I think we're really lucky in that hand to be living in this time that we are, because, you know, when I was working on L Word, that was 15 years ago now, and we didn't have, Facebook was new. There was no Instagram. There was no Twitter. There was very low visibility as far as that goes, as far as the virtual world goes. And it was shown on Showtime. And I think if you were sort of not predisposed to maybe want to watch a show about lesbians, if that's how you viewed it, if that's all you knew about it, then you might not go there. But it was so much more. The show was so much more. It was about women empowering women and fashion. But now as up-and-coming designers, and of course there's Etsy. I go to Etsy a lot. For jewelry, actually. I find a lot of great jewelry on Etsy.
Well, you know, and I never actually drew a connection specifically until you just said this about how you're finding things, but between like the power of something like Instagram and making ethical or sustainable fashion more visible, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, well, duh, of course, but yeah, I could totally see that happening. I do want to ask you, so you're bringing all these cool lines in as much as you can. And by the way, for people listening, we will put all of the names of these designers with links to their sites in the show notes to the episode so that you can find them. So you're talking about shopping. I've got to ask you, like, what happens? Are you buying these clothes? Like, what happens to all of this stuff that goes on the characters after they're done wearing it?
It's very sad for me. Every studio is different. Every network is different. They have different requirements. For instance, at the end of Girlfriend's Guide, which is now, as we're wrapping up that show, a lot of the iconic pieces that you saw on the show are going to go into the NBC archives. So basically, that's a big sort of archival, I want to say warehouse in Los Angeles. Some of those pieces, though, will be auctioned off for charities, which is fantastic. It's amazing and fantastic, and I'm so glad that studios do that. Other pieces will just be archived for future exhibits and things like that. And then the rest of it basically will be sold. At this point, usually at the end of a show, they will try to clear everything out and they will hold either auction it all, they'll hire an auction house and auction it off. Unfortunately, will be whatever city it's in. So, you know, for fans that are spread across North America, for instance, Girlfriend's Guide is also shot in Vancouver. So unfortunately, if you're not in Vancouver, you're not going to make it. Maybe in the future, they will be able to do it online, which would be great.
That seems like a big opportunity because so many people are trying to figure out how to show television viewers and movie watchers how to find the exact clothing that they see on the screen. But if you could actually go buy it and it was secondhand and there was this, I mean, somebody needs to make that business happen.
Absolutely. And you know, the only thing that I could say to that, why it probably has not happened yet, is time and money. And I think at some point, I'm hoping that the networks will realize the value of what they have and the value of what they can get, like the money, whether they give it to charity or whether they just put it back into the production, you know, the value of what they have and what it means to fans. I mean, I still get emails or hit on by, in a nice way, by fans from L Word, for instance. I, you know, And I'm like, oh my God, I have no idea now. It's so long ago and I don't know where you would find that piece anymore. You can't probably. But it's just, I think that's the next step.
Well, I so hope that that happens. And I love everything that you've said. This is really bringing a new whole realm of what happens in the fashion world onto the show. And we're coming up on the end of our time together. And I have a couple of questions.
So sad.
I know. I've loved talking to you. And this is like, I feel like I could go on for much, much longer. But I have a few questions that I always ask people. And I'm excited to ask you, do you have any? So I usually ask tech tools, but apps, books, resources, or just a great low tech piece of advice that's really helped you in your day to day life that you think would help our listeners kick more ass in their day to day lives?
Oh my goodness. Well, you know what? I'm still a little dinosaur in this arena. I mean, I have like the biggest in mailbox because what I tend to do is just pull stuff offline and send it to myself in an email and then just create folders. But you know what? Instagram is my biggest go-to tool. My iPhone, I do everything on my iPhone. I take all of my photos from my fittings on my iPhone. I do use things like Photoshop and things like that because that's sort of the world that I live in.
Do you edit any images on your phone?
Oh, all the time.
What do you use? To edit?
I just use whatever the
native stuff is.
Yeah. Yeah. I crop everything. I try to keep it true because unless it's something I'm putting in Instagram, it's true if I'm showing producers something, if I'm creating my story for an episode, I need the colors to be real that I'm putting forward. Because of course, when we put things in front of camera, whatever our lighting may be, for instance, on Lemony Snicket's, our lighting is very dark. It changes the color of everything that someone's wearing. So I have to be cognizant of that when I'm showing people. So I try to keep it real. I try not to add too many filters unless it's a personal photo that I'm posting. But my iPhone is my biggest tool. I know a lot of people still use cameras, but I just find for what I need to do and for time efficiency and just for it working with all of my iPad and all my Mac products that I use, that's my world in a nutshell. It really doesn't go outside that and virtually. So,
well, and the cameras have gotten so sophisticated now that it does
so
seem like pretty much all you need. So you and I have never met in person, but
no.
If we were to meet and if we were to hang out all day, what do you think I would end up absolutely loving about you and what would drive me insane?
Oh my goodness. Oh, maybe the same thing. I'm a talker, clearly. I could go on and on. And I always feel like I've never told people, like I really want people to understand me. I'm that annoying person. I really feel like I have a lot to offer. So, and I really like to paint a picture with what I say. So I talk too much. And I think at the beginning of a conversation, if you were hanging out with me, you would find that intriguing and you might be learning a lot. But by the end of the day, you would just want me to shut up.
Well, you know, so often it's the same thing. People always come in with the same thing is the thing people love and then also begins to drive people insane. And I think that's it's very true about so many people, myself included. If you had to print a phrase or a motto on a t-shirt and wear it for the next 7 days, what would it be?
Oh yeah. I knew this was coming. So I had a real good think. And for where I'm at this week, I've got an intense week going on and I've got a lot of expectations that need to be actualized for next Tuesday. And my motto for this week is definitely think different.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I would definitely wear that on a shirt. I love it.
Yeah. And I think that even I was thinking about it this morning, I'm like, and I definitely know that I'm about to get up and go and walk into the workroom where all my stitchers and my cutters are working right now. And I know that I need to look at what they're doing and just be open and think different about what they're doing in case we can go a slightly different avenue just to make it a little more unique. And I think it's a great motto that's my motto for the week. And I hope it really helps me create things that are a bit more unique and interesting for all the people on Tuesday.
Well, I think that's a wonderful motto. I'm glad you shared it with us. And I always close out by asking guests who come on the show if you have a question you'd like to ask me. I feel like it's only fair after pegging you with questions for, you know, well over 40 minutes to return the favor, anything silly or serious. And I promise I will give you an honest answer.
Oh my goodness. I'm so much better at being the interviewee than the interviewer. You know what? I don't know.
Had people ask me, they're like, tell me what's in your kitchen sink. Are you wearing socks?
Tell me what room you're in. Because when I had that little brief moment with the camera, I was like, what, is that an attic room? Where is that? Where
I know. I'm in my office. And you're right. You know, I need to spruce it up a little bit so that when people talk to me on Skype, they can have something visual, because what you're staring at is really the closet doors that are behind me and it's all white and there's really no decoration. But what you would see if you were to look directly to the left of my desk, I have a giant vintage Wonder Woman clock that no longer works. But I have my Wonder Woman clock and I have like a Howling Wolf painting and I have all these like sort of things that I like to look at when I get nervous or my day is not going very well. And I'm like, yes, like that's going to make me feel better. So that's what I have in my little office and in my house. I record at home and then other days of the week I go to a co-working studio. So, but I'm here doing this and yeah, see, you came up with a question.
Well, that's great. And all those great things around you are things that empower you. That's fantastic. You know, and I'm looking around my office and that's exactly, yep. I think that's a great thing to do.
Yeah.
Surround yourself with sort of focal points when you're getting off topic or having a moment of,
I know it brings it all back on track. And so, well, I really appreciate you coming on the show and telling us all about what you do and, you know, bringing a breath of fresh air to the podcast. If people want to keep up with you on social media and follow all the things that you're featuring there in the ethical fashion realm these days, what's the best way for them to connect with you online?
Definitely Instagram. Definitely. I keep saying Instagram, but you know what? That's sort of my, there's so much social media right now. I try to get up every morning and do my Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, but Facebook, I want to say, is kind of taking a back seat for me right now because it's just a little too cumbersome now for me. Yeah. And Instagram is the place. Instagram is the place. That's the first thing I look at. That is easy to make comments on things that I've posted. I find that there's usually something for everyone to look at on my Instagram. So I'm always curious who's making comments on what I've posted. And I'm always really happily surprised when I find different people there. And it's really amazing to me. And it's such a global, you know, so anybody from anywhere can reply to that. So Twitter is another great place. People email me as well. And I at my website, but I think Instagram is the best.
And what's your handle?
Oh, I think it's just my name.
We will definitely have a link to it. So if anyone wants to find that, they can find it in the show notes, which is the blog post associated with this episode. And yeah, Cynthia, thank you so much for coming on. This has been such a cool conversation and I hope you have a great rest of your day and good luck with your intense week.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. And I hope maybe we'll talk again sometime. I'd love to.
Done and done. Well, I got so much out of that episode and that conversation with Cynthia. It's really, you know, we record these conversations and then sometimes a lot of time, like many weeks go by between the time that I actually speak to the person and when the conversation goes live. And this is when that's the case. And the conversation has popped back up into my head like every couple of days since we spoke. So I hope it will stick in your mind as well. And who knows, maybe we'll be seeing some more Fest founders and their clothing and accessories on television screens in our future. Now, speaking of the future, one thing that I hope is up ahead for you is more media exposure, more press attention in 2017. And we've created a thing that will help you get that. And it's available for free on Pressdope. And I wanted to just call it out for you so that you can go and find it. It is a nice, neat, down and dirty, straightforward list of 30 daily media outreach tasks. So the idea here is to do something short, small, simple, easy, fast every day or as often as you can to push your media strategy forward in 2017. So many people come to me and say, oh my God, you know, I need more press and I really want to do it, but I feel like I need this big strategy. And I mean, I even had a founder I was speaking to earlier this week say, Lorraine, I don't even have time to go to the bathroom. I don't know how I'm supposed to send out 90 pitch emails every month. And I'm like, well, that's the thing, that you need to shift how you're thinking about all this stuff. Because if you don't have an agency behind you and you don't have a dedicated team working to do this for you, you're going to have to fit it into the cracks. And the best way that I know to do that, and the way that I've done it for myself and have landed press in places like fashionista.com, which covered us earlier this month, and have seen Pressdope members get in all kinds of great places recently, we do a little bit every day. You know, it's not rocket science. There's not some magic wand. It's persistence and diligence and a real can-do attitude, just to sound really cheerleadery for you. But the way that I think is best to do this is to have tasks already laid out. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel every day. You don't have to sit down at your desk and stare off into space wondering what to do next. And to help you with that, we've created this list of 30. So that means a month. Like you could literally do one of them each day of this month. And then when you get to the end of the month, just repeat it and just keep doing that. And a couple months from now, you will have a much, much, much more effective and solid media strategy. and you're going to learn a lot as well. So if you want to grab that list, you can go to pressdope.com/blog, and you're going to see the box where you can download that in the sidebar, put your email address in, we'll send you the list, and you're on your way. Now that's one thing that can help you kick more ass in your day-to-day life, but we've got a whole lot more of those waiting in the Spirit of 608. Fest is the best Facebook group that we have for Fest founders, and it's totally free to join. You can find a link to do so on Spirit of 608 at spiritof608.com/blog. And but once you get in there, every week we do things like ask people to share the press that they're getting so we can all try to tweet each other and, you know, share each other's media, and also just read what's going on with other Fest founders and brands and find out which publications really want to hear news from them. We also share our feed of the week, just try to keep each other going through what is often, you know, those tough entrepreneurial days. And one of my favorite things that we do each week is share resources, tips, tools, pieces of advice, apps, podcasts, anything that is really making a difference in our day-to-day lives that we want other Fest founders to know about. So here are a couple of the top tools and resources mentioned in our most recent knowledge drop posts. So here we go. Casey, who has a really cool company based out of Richmond, Virginia called Hand Socks for Babies, mentioned Upwork. And I totally agree with you, Casey. I have found many great people to help and grow the Spirit of 608 team via Upwork. So I can't recommend that enough. I've actually found it to be a really great resource for finding people to do help with Instagram. So just to shout that out, Upwork is a great resource. Thanks, Casey, for that recommendation. Maria Aulis, who is actually coming on the show in a couple weeks to school us on some very important legal knowledge that we need to have as founders. She recommended a book that she's been reading called The Compound Effect. And she said it's a little salesy every once in a while, but it's definitely a must read. And so if you're looking for a business book to add to your list, maybe something to listen to on Audible as you are cruising around in your day to day, check out The Compound Effect. Bridget recommends Podio for managing workflow. And there's a free version that you can use just to try it out and start. I've actually heard some interesting things about Podio. I've not tried it myself, but it's something that there are a lot of interesting apps and other things that connect to it via stuff like Zapier. So, you know, check it out. It could streamline what you have to do in your day-to-day life. There is a link posted on our Facebook group feed. It's all about email marketing across different industries. So Sumo, I don't know if you're aware of this company, but they have a lot of cool tools that you can use to integrate different marketing activities into your website. I've used them in the past for pop-ups. But anyway, they put out the State of Email Marketing 2017, and it had some really interesting stats and findings about what different industries are doing and not doing as far as their email marketing goes. And guess what? Fashion was really doing well. So it's worth it to look through this report just to get a understanding of what the status quo is and maybe where there are some other opportunities to amp up your email marketing from one of the leading companies that's paying attention to this stuff. A couple more to call out. Charmin mentions the Good On You app. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people talking about this app. I'm going to have to find out more, maybe get somebody from their company onto the show. But it helps you find, from what I understand, it helps you find products that are going to be more in line with your ethics and values so you can shop responsibly. Olivia mentions How I Built This, which is an amazing podcast put out by NPR. If you have not listened to How I Built This and you listen to The Spirit of 608, you're going to love How I Built This. So I encourage you to go subscribe to it right now. They've had a lot of great shows lately. The Barbara Corcoran one was just killer. Loved it. Liza mentions the Reportive app, and she says it's a small Gmail extension and it shows you LinkedIn profiles of anyone you are sending an email to, which can be really useful for media because I often recommend when you're pitching that you want to personalize the first sentence or two in a genuine way. You want to mention something to that person that shows that you actually know who they are and what they're up to. And if you have this app connected to your Gmail, then, you know, you don't have to actually go off into another browser tab to scan what they've been up to and to include something. So check all of those out. We'll put them in the show notes. And if you want more things like that in your day-to-day, come join us in the Spirit of 608 Facebook group. And I hope you'll join me next time for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call it Fest, and it's the future.